Welcome to the Reality Revolution. I'm your host, Brian Scott. Today we're going to return to Manly P. Hall and an incredible lecture on the Akashic Records. If you've checked out previous episodes, I have a meditation on the Akashic Records. And very interestingly, in an interview with Jim McCarty, he explains as we move to the new earth or fourth density, that one of the aspects of this is the Akashic becomes conscious. I do believe we are moving into this higher level of consciousness, which includes access to the Akashic Records. So it's very interesting to read Manly P. Hall's discussion of the Akashic Records. He wrote this in the 30s, right when humanity was starting to get a faint glimmer and glimpse of the Akashic. The Akashic Record is the collection of all memories, of all situations, of everything. And Manly P. Hall was an incredible lecturer who could really break down very complicated things. And so when I found this lecture that he gave on Akashic Records, particularly in relation to reincarnation and karma, I thought I could share it because it has some new insights on the Akashic and the etheric body that you might find interesting. Manly P. Hall begins by saying, "Tonight, we are dealing with what is called the Akashic Records, that is, the records which are preserved in nature of all that occurs. Occasionally, such records become tangible to us, as in a mirage where a city that has disappeared many years ago is still left in the atmosphere. This has caused a great deal of wonder because it seems a record remains. Not only does man preserve records by carving on bones and stones the primitive impulse of his consciousness, but he preserves invisible records. These are also important and are of considerable importance to our modern world. Suppose in a world war great and valuable knowledge in the form of books and manuscripts was lost. Would that loss be irretrievable? No, nothing that is knowledge can ever be lost, and nothing that is necessary to progress can be destroyed. If a museum is going to be blown up, one or two valuable documents will be removed, or if they are destroyed, they will be preserved in the air. Most of you are aware of the life of Madame Blavatsky and some of the things she did in the compiling of her books. There was one very interesting episode. Madame Blavatsky was in a small town, so impoverished, she was not able to have heat to keep her warm. She needed a book for reference. The book, or it was really a manuscript, existed only in the library at the Vatican. She wrote to a friend in Italy and asked her to communicate with the Vatican and see if she could get the book for her. In a week, the word came back the book was not available and she could do no more about it. Whereupon, Madame Blavatsky sat down and by concentration was able to transcribe a complete page from the manuscript, all but one word. One word she could not bring through. She described the action as seeing the page in the air, but that one word she could not bring through. Her friends and followers became so interested in this experiment, added pressure was put on upon an effort to get the book from the Vatican, and finally, after a time, the manuscript was shown to them, and in the manuscript that word had been eaten away by a bookworm and was not in the manuscript. That might seem an extraordinary thing, but it is one of those peculiar faculties which might be contacted under certain conditions. We could not advise you to try to read books in the Vatican because for the most of us, there are enough books in print for us to read. But the existence of powers in nature extending far beyond the known is now generally acknowledged. A number of colleges and universities are experimenting in various forms of physical experiments, trying to prove the reality of telepathy, thought transference, and many other interesting things which are essentially important. That knowledge is not yet a moral force in our lives, but we are approaching a day when it will be. We will begin the subject of the Akashic Records by giving you some definitions, because without definitions, unless we know what we are talking about, it is hard to proceed with any great success. The term Akashic Record is an East Indian term. The word Akasha means a subtle essence. It is not ether, but more correctly, it is mental matter. just as surely as physical matter is composed of an infinite mass of minute organisms, so mental matter, 1,000 times more refined than physical matter, is composed of an infinite mass of units. The units of this matter is the mentoid, or the mental unit of energy, and mental matter exists wherever any form of matter has an abiding place. Mental matter fills this room as water fills a glass, but it is much more subtle than atmosphere or even ether or even emotional matter. It can be here at the same time these others are here without interfering with them. In every direction you look, in what appears to be empty space is really a fullness you cannot cognize because of the limitation of the sense of perceptions. One of the things we have discovered, even by radio, is this mysterious field of energy is not just empty space. By examining frost patterns on the window pane, we find waves of energy definitely resembling plants. It is a rate of vibration that causes frost pictures, and there is a rate of energy that can slowly produce a plant. Therefore, we can know there are principles active in nature. We know by radio we cannot consider space as empty. That as surely as there are rivers that flow across the earth, so surely there are rivers flowing in the air. Just as surely as there are storms we see visibly, so surely there are storms we cannot sense. There are innumerable forces moving in the air. To cover this substance, science created the term ether. It used this term because through this substance can be sent a message. A person can speak, and thousands of miles away another person can hear that speech. Whatever this substance is, the voice goes through. It transforms that voice into pure energy to be picked up by a retransformation at the other end. But at the same time, it is something that does not permit that sound to be dissipated. If you drop a drop of ink into a glass of water, it disappears. But if you drop a sound in space, you can pick it up thousands of miles away. There's something there, and not knowing what that something is and never being able to define it. Science calls it a hypothetical medium, which is just a large word for saying they do not know what it is. They know it has to be there because things could not occur as they occur unless it was there. They know there has to be a carrier for this vibration. At this moment, 200 or 300 radio programs are going through this room, and they do not get mixed up. Each one moving on a rate of vibration goes through without interfering with the others. And with a radio receiving set, you can pick them up. This means the vibratory waves are kept intact. We catch them in solid form on a phonographic disc. The sound makes a notch. A needle goes over the notch and plays a tune. You do not think of notches in the air, but there has to be something of the kind. So ether became the name for this substance, and it is appropriate. Let us say matter, which is in the lowest section, is subject to physical analysis. Laboratories are working with it all the time. They are trying to find something smaller than the ion. They have found if you break matter down far enough, it goes off into the invisible. This is the physical substance which we build houses out of, make shoes of, everything we build physically. Just above this we have our etheric level, and it is this etheric level which is the first sphere of invisibility. The lower part of ether mingling with the higher parts of matter results in a combination of both of these forces, and it is at this point there is created an etheric element which is necessary in space for the carrier of the voice. As you go higher, this ether becomes more attenuated. Ether is always present. It permeates the body as though the body did not exist. It flows through it as though we were completely porous, yet it never interferes with our lower substance. This etheric substance which flows through us has a profound influence upon us. It is in this etheric field that lies all the mysteries of mesmerism and magnetism. If you go further above this, you come to a more refined substance, properly termed your astral stuff. We are not referring to stars, but to a quality of space, a substance that is intangible, but is the reservoir of feeling, and we would have no emotions if there were no way for this substance to impinge itself. Above this emotional matter, we have the highest form of matter, mental matter. Going from above down, we have mental matter, emotional matter, ether and physical matter. Mental matter is the very stuff of thinking. It is the very abode of the mind, and the mind keeps working down through these substances until in the brain it works through thought. Your Akashic records are pictures, the remembrance of all things sustained in this mental matter. Because this being mental matter, it is capable of thought and particularly of memory. Therefore, the memory of all things is preserved. The memory of all thought abides in the mental level. The memory of all feeling abides in the emotional level. The memory of all growth in the level below that, and the memory of all form in the lowest level. Just as surely as we use over and over again the physical elements in the building of bodies, so surely we use this etheric substance over again. We use this common reservoir of emotional substance every time we build an emotional body. And the mental substance is capable, likewise, of being used over and over again. This is why war becomes such a great problem, because in the emotional field, the reason being obvious, war involves a great demoralization of feeling. It is as though you went out and poisoned wells. It is worse than that, because you place in the emotional field a terrific mass of emotional excesses. The individual working with millions of other individuals produces an accumulated mass of emotional unbalance and deterioration. About this time, someone is born that has to have an emotional nature, and it has to be made out of this unbalanced emotional substance, and that is why degeneration follows after war. Individuals born after a war have to derive the substance for their emotional nature from this depleted emotional sphere. Just as surely as we poison the physical earth during war, so surely we poison this emotional sphere. Many miles of the physical earth during the last war were rendered unsuitable for growth. You could not grow a plant on it. The poison gas and chemicals went into the earth and rendered it sterile. All right, your emotional plane filled with the excesses of emotions, which is the subjective reaction from your physical life, poisons this whole sphere, and everyone to some measure participates in that poison. And because it works insidiously from within, it is particularly difficult to detect. But those suffer the most who have to build bodies. Therefore, soon after a war, you have your gangsters, your gang war, crimes of all kinds, emotional excesses, and your emotional demoralization, particularly manifested as mass derangement. In this plane, therefore, we have the emotional memory, which goes on for a considerable time after death, before the substance of this sphere is purified. The minimum period of purification for the emotional body is 11 years. After a war, or mass period of unbalance, it will require from 50 to 100 years before this matter has purified itself, before the emotional sewerage has been cleared of the emotional destruction which follows through it. The vital sphere seldom, if ever, has any derangements, because the vital sphere, the sphere of growth, belongs to a part of man's organism that neither feels nor thinks. It relates to the development and growth in education, to the experiences of the human life from the 10th to the 14th year. We find very little emotional contamination affecting this sphere. However, after a mass unbalance, you find a high death rate, as in a war, or a pestilence or disease will sometimes result from destructiveness. Now, the germ theory is related to this. After wars, you have epidemics. The influenza epidemic that followed the World War killed more people than the war. This is due to the contamination of this plane by loss of vitality and the destruction of the etheric bodies through explosions and premature death. The etheric memory of that unbalance remains until there has been an opportunity for complete reorganization and it generally requires from 5 to 7 years to clear this etheric matter of any great amount of imbalance in it. You have between the physical and etheric planes a little zone, and it's here we have the lower etheric memory records. This is your sphere of mirage. This etheric memory remains for a time and then gradually fades out. Your etheric memory seldom exceeds 500 years. The etheric records are constantly changing, particularly the higher. The etheric double of the individual fades out almost immediately. The etheric body of the individual is completely absorbed in a period of 35 years, unless the person is earthbound, when that individual has a forced extension of the etheric state. But your true memory is up here in your plane of mind, and your akasha is your mental stuff, with other modifications. But simply, it is mental stuff, and here a record remains for incalculable lengths of time. The mental body of man is absorbed immediately after death. That is within 200 or 300 years. So there is but a minor period of memory. But when you realize the earth has one of each of these parts and all life on earth is moving through them, and the mental body of the earth is like the mental body of man, it will remain as long as he exists. Therefore, the mental body of the earth remains as long as the earth exists. And as a result of this, the mental body of the earth preserves records practically permanently. It does not preserve them as pictures. It does not preserve them as incidents. It preserves them in the sense you remember what happened to you when you were 10 years old. You don't have it always in your consciousness, but suddenly something happens, and out of your mind comes the memory. You do not have this memory always in your consciousness, but you pull it out when you want it. The Akashic records are not pictures of the earth, but the capacity to revive the memory of things as they have been. And the Akashic records remain as long as the earth exists. The Akashic records are a little too heavy, a little too vast to be completely concerned with man. The Akashic records have very little in them concerning the actions of individuals unless these individuals so stand out from the background that they have become great forces in the mental activity of nature. Therefore, the Akashic record of yourself begins when you become an individual, when you become a dominant force rather than one of races or nations. But in the records are the records of races and nations. Since the beginning of time, records we will never be able to remove, records of all essential wisdom, because this mental nature has the capacity to revive out of itself everything that has happened to it. In the same way, the individual may revive out of his memory the things that have happened to him. They are not always objective. Sometimes they are subjective, but they can, under certain circumstances, be projected and become readable and knowable by a person who has the capacity to attune himself through some adept who generally functions, disciplines mind rather than telling him. He thinks he has the capacity to read them, but it is a reflection of the mind of the teacher. The Akashic records are what might be termed the great library of the earth, the great newspaper of the earth, the great history of the earth, and from the time mental matter was distinguishable in manifestation of the earth. Those records have been unbroken and will remain unbroken until the earth is absorbed back into the great entity. The effect of this on the mind of the individual concerning the individual's memory of past lives is something like this. A. Memory of past lives. We have one fact to consider relative to this problem, and that is the average person is not sufficiently important to impress this collective mental substance. Did you ever go up on the top of a tall building and look down on human beings? They go out of perspective and become infinitesimal. In comparison, with the changes which occur in nature, such as the Atlantean deluge, the fact some individual does not feel well or some individual is unhappy is of very little importance and would make no impression on these great records. So the memory of past lives is limited in most cases to certain reactions from actions. In other words, we are here to fulfill certain unpaid bills. The weight of those bills gives an indication of what we were last time, and few people like to think about that because it is evident they were not as good as they thought they were. There is also quite a possibility of experience along racial types which will cause an individual to develop an interest in his present life consistent with the karmic life of the previous one, and it will focus toward one culture or another because of the previous experience. That is not because the individual living now in a previous life was part of this culture, but rather the principle that projected his present life, projected his previous incarnation. A good example of that is a person I happen to know, a very roly-poly little man, now advancing toward a venerable age, who has 3 or 4 scraggly hairs hanging on either side of his nose and 2 or 3 coming from his chin, is definitely of the Chinese eye structure, and yet he was born in Oshkosh of Old English parentage. This man was never in his life been interested in anything except China. He looks like a Chinese, acts like a Chinese, has become such an authority on Chinese matters. The last time the Chinese government published an encyclopedia in 1,000 volumes, they asked him to edit them. He knew more about the Chinese language than the Chinese did. All you need to do is wrap a Mandarin robe around him and you could pass him off as one of the 3 important Josses of China. There is no mistake where he came from, yet there is no Chinese blood in him. But from time to time, he could first remember China was the only thing he was interested in. That does not mean he lived in China, but that the principle that projected him had projected a series of bodies that lived in China, and there was sufficient of the Chinese in his karma, in the subjective life, to come forward. You will occasionally find this. There are misfits in every race. This is because of the records that are in the souls or the subjective parts surrounding these bodies. It will probably take this man 5 more lives to get rid of the Chinese influence, or he is so interested in it that he is apt to be born again there. He is one of those geographical misfits that exist all over the earth. The humble man rises to great position because back of him is great soul power. So you have in that way a method in some cases of picking out possibilities concerning past lives. The auric memory. We now come to another important thing. The personal aura of the individual consists of 2 parts. One part that is limited to the personality itself and is disintegrated with and is reprojected with the next personality. And the second part is unchanging. It remains as long as the individual remains that is casting off these personalities. If we could only think of spiritual principles back of us being a force that is constantly building personalities, we would have the proper picture. And these personalities being built all have their personal auras, consisting of the physical body, the etheric double and astral body, and the mental body, and there are other auras that remain throughout all the cycle of reincarnation and do not change with the life. The higher auras that do not change with life but remain through the cycle of life are the ones in which certain records are stored under certain conditions. The individual may glimpse something from one of these records, not from the Akashic records of nature, but from the auric records of himself. This is a little difficult to explain. I don't know whether we are getting into too deep water or not, but I feel it drawing in over my head. Let us do some more work on the auras. We have told you the aura is the field within which the manifestation of the individual takes place. We also told you the aura consists of 7 parts, or if we overlooked that, we tell you now. Of these 7 parts, 4 change with every life and 3 do not. The 4 lower die off with the physical body in the after-death state, but the 3 higher do not change but remain the same from the beginning of human existence to the end of time. And remember, it is in the highest of the lower of these parts, the focus point remains surrounded by its soul record. You remember little Oscar we drew before? Surrounding little Oscar is his etheric double. This etheric double is the first invisible body. Around this is the emotional matter, shaped like an egg with the large part down. Cutting through this is his mental nature, which is not quite that big with some people. That is a very large mind. Outside of this are 3 ova, which form this egg with the larger end up. Within this egg, there are 3 little layers, which compass this outer aura, which does not change between incarnations. The physical body ceases, the etheric double ceases, the emotional body ceases, and the mental body ceases. Then we have this focus of principle surrounded by the soul ring. But this larger aura does not come off during a life cycle. Death and life have nothing to do with its existence except to record what occurs in it. The three outer vehicles we will designate A, B, and C, with A on the outside and C on the inside. These three vehicles which remain together with the entity which is located in the lower constitutes the permanent being. These three vehicles become the repository of certain experiences, and the result is you have an auric memory, a memory related to the aura, which is the repository of the auric records. Because after all, these records contain the digested mass of innumerable lives and are in themselves the repository of things finished and things yet untouched. Remember, this soul is constantly finishing things, solving problems, and the solved problems go back into the aura as spiritual power, and this record is therefore there. It is by means of this record adepts have, as in the case of Buddha, been able to identify 600 lives, but this is not a personal entity doing this. Adeptship is necessary to do it. It is not possible until the individual has gained consciousness on plane C, which is the lowest of the higher planes. When he has reached this place, he can function on this causal plane or plane of inspiration. He begins to see these records and he becomes the master of the entire series of personalities through which he has evolved. But remember, it is not John Doe, the personality, that becomes wise. It is the bodies that are building up the release of this spiritual power until the spiritual power is capable of being possessed by knowledge. To the adept, this knowledge is available, but it is not available to the average person because they could not stand it. We have troubles enough. We have trouble enough without knowing all about the mistakes we have made since the dawn of time. We have a great many people who claim to know their past lives. Most of these people have either imagined it or wished it. Having the wish, they may have found fulfillment of the wish in something that occurred. Maybe they dreamed about something. Maybe they ate something too late at night, and as a result, things happened which, because they had studied the subject, they regarded as of great significance, and out of this experience came a group of previous lives. You will probably remember the two members who attended an occult meeting. One got up and said, "I am Hypatia," and the other one jumped up and said, "You are not, I am Hypatia," and so on ad nauseum. Nothing is achieved in the consideration of these things. A number of years ago, we had a great number of incarnations wandering around. Years ago, we had Jacob Bohm, a quaint character with a bullet-shaped head and no front teeth. He remembered definitely he was Jacob Bohm in a previous life. Jacob Bohm was very obscure in some of his statements, so I gave this man a list of questions relative to Bohm's philosophy, and he didn't know anything about them. In the last 20 years, I have met 20 Cleopatras. There were a number of them after the motion picture was made. I have met Lord Bacon and Frederick the Great and three or four apostles. For a while there was a drug on the market. But in some way, all these people, due to some karma, seem to have lost a great deal of their intelligence en route. They do not seem to realize a spiritual entity that would produce such a personality as Bohm would never produce anything less than a Bohm. Therefore, when we hear Socrates has just come back, just wait and see if Socrates brings anything. Because great souls coming back will return with what this world sorely needs. Several years ago, about 10 or 15, the what you were in the past life memory was raging, and people were remembering all the things they had done, and it was always something nice and important. I never met anybody who claimed to be Judas Iscariot in their last life. It was always someone who had done something. Napoleons were frequent, and George Washington turned up on one occasion. Now, in the first place, seriously speaking, I am speaking to people who want to really study, people who are really doing some thinking and are not interested in finding out what they have been. The question is, what can we do with the now? We have here a personality far from perfect, and the real student is not so interested in what he has done as what he can do out of the opportunities given to him. We have never seen any good come from people who tried to find out who they were in the last life. We find searching after the last reincarnation is about the least useful thing we can do. We forget behind us is something we are trying to get over, and we are trying to live up to something better. We should use the tools we bring with us to carve a better destiny. We should not use them in an effort to go back and see our past lives. Our past lives are interesting, but not particularly useful to us because if we could see them, they would overshadow and distort the present life. What our concern is to use the tools we now have to carve with them a character that will sustain us and to some degree help us to sustain others. And in that lies our true usefulness. Now, we have another interesting thing to consider. The mirage is a shadow of things that have a peculiar projection due to the reflection and refracting power of the air. We are all subject to mirages. When a human being has a mirage, we call it hallucination. Out it is practically the same thing. It is something that is the production of a disharmony of adjustment between the spirit and material parts of men. Therefore, we definitely strive to insist that the individual give up any effort or inclination to dabble with any systems of development and to realize that development is the result of achievement, not a formula. That may seem to contradict a great many schools of thought, but in substance, it does not contradict any of them. It merely places philosophy upon a sound basis. If we know how subtle, how easily influenced these super physical vehicles are, we would certainly be very careful and cautious in permitting any system of thought to disarrange our rational processes. We have already told you a little about the relationship of planes and creatures. Now it is only fair to add at this time, for the sake of clarity, these planes being really subtle essences, refined forms of matter for the four lower vehicles of the earth. Just as surely as we have our material or physical bodies, our vital, emotional, and mental bodies, so surely these are derived from the mental, emotional, vital, and physical bodies of the earth. Therefore, these planes are the bodies of the earth. Planes are merely vehicles of superior beings, even as bodies are the vehicles of lower beings. And within our own planes, evolution is going on. These planes are by no means created to produce bodies solely for us. These planes have their own unfoldment going on within them. In the physical plane, we have all the kingdoms visible. In the etheric plane, we have all the elementals or elementaries. We also have certain vital parasites, which are the result of invisible disease and invisible disharmonies in the same way we have physical ailments. In the astral plane, the Eastern philosophers tell us, exist the devas. Now, the devas are beings belonging to a previous evolutionary cycle, having no part truly in our lives, but occasionally involving themselves in our lives in the same way we occasionally involve ourselves in the lives of others. The devas have vehicles composed of the substance of this astral plane. Therefore, the only contact they can have with man is with that part of man that functions on this plane, or his emotional body. You have a certain form of emotional religious hysteria which sets up currents moving in the emotional sphere, and by means of emotional clairvoyance, it is possible to see the devas. They are a legitimate creature in their own plane, and their only contact with us is by accident. In the emotional plane are the thought forms which have been dragged down to the emotional level. Here, also, we have all the creatures that are the product of emotional imbalance, not creatures with emotional natures. We have emotional elementals. We have all the products of diseased or distorted emotions. When we come to the mental plane, we have what is called in India the air deva, or the deva that lives in the air. The air being the symbol of mind, air, earth, fire, and water. The mental devas are higher than those met in the lower planes and can only be contacted mentally. They have no direct place in our lives, but play a small part during a period of personal unfoldment, only in the highest form. There are schools which teach that man can control these devas. There are schools of ceremonial magic and are good schools for the average person to stay long way from. As in the story of Dr. Faustus, it is usually finished up with the elemental going off with the sorcerer. It is far better not to control or direct these creatures. I speak of this because there is a definite school of thought which attempts to accomplish things by means of the devas. But the devas do not belong to our evolution, and it is not considered the best of ethics to involve them in our evolution. They are neither our servants nor our masters. They are evolving their own life in their own way, and occasionally, under certain conditions, will impinge themselves upon our lives. But so rarely you could count on your fingers the times it has been done. we find abiding in this plane all the ailments that affect the human mind in the form of thought parasites and mental monstrosities. These planes are not only conveying a normal evolution upward into invisible planes we know not of, but also artificial entities which are the product of disorganization in these planes. This disorganization is due to the disorganization in the invisible auras that make up the plane, namely the corresponding bodies of the individual. And he builds these out of his own actions and thoughts, and as a result they become his master. So it is important to keep circulation clear. It is well not to have any preconceived notions. Inordinate ambitions and appetites, exhaust yourself or step in front of a truck. We may say there are accidents on all planes. We may be the cause of mistakes on all the planes. We have been taught to think the worst things that can happen to us are on the physical plane, but really, the worst things that can happen to us are on the mental plane because the intensity of values increase up there. And the least important of all things is the physical. One old student once said, "The physical part of man is the tail appendage of nothing. It is the least part of man. It is only the upper parts that are of the greatest importance." Now you study people and you come against an interesting problem. About 90% of people have disordered minds. Not disordered to the degree we call them insane, but disordered to the degree they are doing themselves no good. Disordered to the degree they have stopped the thinking process through prejudices. They have failed to recognize them and reason through quick judgment. They have thought patterns which dominate them. They have fears or doubts that overwhelm them. And for one reason or another, the mind is not a relaxed, flowing process. It is all dammed up with notions. It is just as difficult to make the mind behave as the body behave. And in order to make it behave, you have to go after more attenuated matter because the mind is drawn out of the mental plane substance, consistent with itself. And if you have a prejudice within your mind, the mind will keep pouring the reasons why you should have that prejudice. Whatever mistakes you make, the mind will help you to make them. It is like the jiu-jitsu that causes you discomfiture by assisting you to fall over yourself. In this way, whatever level our emotions or thoughts are on, from the same level of these planes, we draw the substance of our survival. It is just as necessary we take in energy emotionally as physically, and we absorb the energy from these higher fields into the aura. We draw ourselves what we are. And that means it is a very important thing to put the four parts of our nature in order by physical normalcy, moderation of effort, moderation of attachments and ambitions and rationality, normalcy and balance of thinking. These things strengthen us on these invisible planes, and as we know, we are merely an invisible force manifesting through a visible body. The quality of that force determines the normalcy of manifestation. So let us never think of only the body being capable of ailing. The late Rudolf Steiner, before he passed away, made a series of interesting and involved researches in this matter. Some of his findings are most interesting to consider while possibly not ultimate. He believed a great many diseases are due to the maladjustments between these four bodies. What we call disease is really a physical manifestation of the decease of our superphysical parts. When we realize how many people are subject to grief, how many are lonely, how many are worried, how many are fearful, we cannot wonder how little health there is under those circumstances. And that is one of the reasons the disciplines of philosophy call for rationality, self-control and self-discipline, because you can never become spiritually great until you have at least put that house in order, and the auras tell you whether it is in order or not. Therefore, in that way, the aura becomes the record or the memory of the action, the record of everything you have done in this life. Later incorporated in this soul disc, it becomes the basis of future life. Future life means a future chain of bodies. Each one begins where you left off before. If you worried yourself to death in the last life, you are born with a worrying mind in this. And unless you overcome it in this life, you will still have it in the next life. Imprudence in action will still be with you. You will always be faced with problems until you solve it. Therefore, the desirability of immediate solution, and solution is the accomplishment of balance, There is no wealth known to man, no treasure we can gather, no achievement we can accomplish among men that can be compared with the achievement of normalcy of our superphysical nature. That is the basis of happiness, wealth, and wisdom, and the realization of that begins when these things we want to accomplish. The etheric records. We are going to talk a little more about the etheric records because they are rather important to us at this moment. When we pass out of the physical life, we remain in the etheric body normally only for 3 to 4 days. That body is the first one to be cast off because it is the closest to the physical body. We are only in it long enough to transfer these records to the superior consciousness. Therefore, we die the second time within 3 or 4 days. Most people do not know it, however, because they do not achieve equilibrium in the invisible planes within that length of time. The consciousness that fades out at death does not usually restate itself before 4 or 6 days after death. There's so much adjustment. It does not have to be born and build another body from infancy, but it does remain semi-conscious through the process of transition. The only exception is the adept, who is conscious during this process. The normal person remains asleep, and this sleep of death remains until the records have been transferred. When he wakes up, he does not know time has elapsed, but time has elapsed as we know it on the physical plane. When he comes to, he is in his emotional body, or his astral body. Somewhere floating behind in the plane of ether is the etheric double he cast off, the wraith, or the ghost, the thing that can be inhabited by elementals. It is merely a wraith that possesses within itself no superior nature, and like a mask may be worn by the creatures of that plane. The disintegration of the etheric body is permitted to be entombed, and if there is a mummification or anything of that kind, the process of the etheric disintegration is greatly retarded. That is why advanced occult students advise cremation after the third day, because it permits the dissolution of the etheric double. And the more rapidly that dissolves, the more rapidly the individual is emancipated from earthly ties, and the less opportunity of being earthbound or wandering around in an uncertain state. There is no feeling in the physical body if the cremation is done after the third day. The entity has ceased to have that physical body. If the body is entombed, it makes no great difference. If the individual does not have 3 days after death, it makes no great difference. If it did, there would be a great deal of tragedy in nature. If these things are not done, there is no great damage done. But in order to cooperate as far as possible, it is advisable to do certain things. But if you know someone who has not had the advantage of this understanding, do not worry. Nothing interferes with nature. Some things just cooperate a little better than others. As soon as the entity has moved into the astral or emotional body, the etheric double begins to disappear, and it disappears from below upward. It fades slowly, as though a light were being turned off. It takes anywhere from 10 to 30 years for this to fade. The time may be longer, but the last thing to fade is the face, which may frequently be seen with no flowing robes of ether. It is the final part to go. When that is disintegrated, the etheric body has been reduced to its basic element, and it may be incorporated in other bodies. When you get into the emotional plane, you have a considerably longer period of time for the reason that there you have a complete and legitimate body, whereas the etheric body is only the upper octave of the physical body and is closely related to it. In the etheric body, until they are transferred, the upper bodies are the records. These records must be in some way turned over to the next highest vehicle. If the death takes some exceedingly violent form, in which the etheric body is destroyed along with the physical, then you have a problem. You have an individual who may have lived a number of years and had many experiences which are not recorded, as in the case of a man in the war who was so close to a gun when it went off they could not find any pieces of his body. Under those conditions, the records are destroyed because ether is destructible by material force. The old ceremonial magicians knew a sharp sword would cut an elemental. Your etheric double can be injured by physical force, and under these extraordinary circumstances, it can be shattered with the physical body. Shock, concussion, and violence are very destructible to the etheric double, but they have no effect on the higher bodies. If that occurs, you have knowledge, but you do not have a record of it. You have in the physical plane, in the etheric plane, a record, because there is an etheric memory which is not permanent, but does last for a time. It is the shadow or mirage, but the etheric body is gone, and there is no way of transferring those records to the higher bodies. The result is the entity may immediately reincarnate long enough to build an etheric body, which means a child will be born, may live a month or 2 months, then die, because it has picked up the record. And then it can go on and complete the cycle, because the entity did not complete the cycle. When the entity reincarnates, the two lower vehicles are reformed, and when the etheric body is reformed, it picks up the records, and the entity can go on using the pictures and patterns in the ether instead of building them again. That explains why the infant mortality rate is so high. It is due to violent deaths in the previous existence and the loss of records. Under those conditions, the same person comes back and lives a few months or until it gets the etheric record, then continues with the cycle. A great deal of investigation has been done on this matter, investigations which have covered a considerable length of time. Once it has reestablished the records, picking them up like a blotter, the consciousness goes back and continues the cycle. There is no actual damage done in reality. What appears to be damage is only a delay of a few years, which does not mean much in eternity. We must realize nothing can happen to the individual that can destroy him. He is immortal. The personalities may be destroyed, or the bodies may be destroyed at any time, but they do not cause any spiritual worry. It is important we normalize these bodies. Then we will live long and become important to the universe. There is nothing important but spiritual facts, and the rest is unimportant. So, this fascinating discussion, I don't know what to make of it. So, we have an etheric body that seems to be very important, that obviously can be affected when we die suddenly. I found that to be interesting. And I'd love to get Manly P. Hall experts in the comments to explain some of this stuff, because some of this stuff did go over my head. It's implied in here that not everybody is in the records, but only certain people. And I certainly would like to know more about that. The discussion of the divas is important as well. I was reading a recent channeling by Kuo, where he explains that when we move into fourth density, the reason that it would be very disruptive is that we would see these divas and we would see elementals. And that is why in third density, we are veiled to that stuff. So all this stuff that he's talking about, all these planes are going on all around us. And while in third density, we're kind of blind to it, which I find interesting. This particular discussion is focused towards reincarnation. And so it is interesting. I do meet a lot of people that think they're some famous person. Oh, they think they are Edgar Cayce. And there's some sort of distortion that occurs. So it's not entirely accurate. But the Akashic Record fascinates me. I would love to know more. I would love to know more how to access it. I do believe we are accessing it. I do believe it's becoming easier to access as we move into fourth density or the fifth dimension or into the new earth, as consciousness changes, as we undergo this reality revolution. One of the main aspects is the Akashic. Now, this is a very old understanding of the Akashic based on detailed research done from mystery schools by Manly P. Hall. I found the discussion of Madame Blavatsky not being able to read a word that had been eaten by a bookworm fascinating. And there are examples of this all around. People have accessed the Akashic. People are doing it when they remote view, and we're becoming more adept at this quantum non-locality, which I believe that is happening, that allows us to access that mirage. So this helps a little bit. It adds some new terms for me to research and understand, and I wanted to share it with you, and I'd love to get your full explanation of what some of this matters. Clearly, there's some important information. Obviously, there are some huge implications from this, including a discussion of what happens to your body post-death, and even a contemplation of the infant mortality rate being related to our etheric double. Wow, all of that's super fascinating, and I would love to get your perspective. Also, a discussion of the way that the ether is affected and how epidemics occur. Now, we did not have a great war, but we definitely had a great amount of emotion that may have caused the epidemic recently. I don't know. I would love to get your discussion of that as well. So I understand Manly P. Hall can be hard to follow. He was definitely on a higher level for sure. And I don't do a lot of episodes on Manly P. Hall, except if it's really powerful. So if you do like these discussions, I do have several episodes previous to this that you might find interesting. And we'll definitely try to discover more about the Akashic from other sources. But this is a interesting lecture, and I thought you would enjoy it. In any case, all episodes of The Reality Revolution can be found at therealityrevolution.com. And welcome to The Reality Revolution.